Even with the incentives that the state's put out, we could be in a position of shortfall as early as 2014, 2015.
Anchorage may be on course to run low on natural gas in just a few years. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, September 26th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, hundreds of Exxon Valdez claimants haven't picked up their settlement checks.
We've made quite a thorough search over the last 2 years and simply have not been able to locate them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
A fall can cause traumatic brain injury and require follow-up care outside of your home community. To help prevent falls, eat foods that are rich in calcium and vitamin D, like fish head soup and kelp with herring eggs. Be active, walk often, participate in subsistence activities, and have your vision checked at least once a year. More information at anthc.org. This message sponsored by the ANTHC Injury Prevention Program.
The body found this week on the Coastal Trail in Anchorage has been confirmed as that of a woman missing for 7 weeks. Police say in a statement that dental records were used to confirm the identity of 63-year-old Letitia Baxter. She had been reported missing August 3rd. The manner and cause of death haven't been determined. Anchorage homicide detectives continue their investigation. Baxter was an avid user of Anchorage's trail system, where targeted searches have been made since her disappearance. Baxter's boyfriend, Gerard Hess, tells KTUU that he found the human remains on Monday. He says the remains were so badly decomposed that he couldn't confirm the identity. Anchorage utilities say the city is on course to run low on natural gas much sooner than expected. That was the message they told the municipality during a mayor's task force meeting on energy today. The utilities called for a plan B to address the situation. Utility officials referenced a recent study that shows the city could begin to run low on gas as early as 2014. Lee Tebert, a senior vice president at Chugach Electric Association, presented a PowerPoint with the latest data.
We have been working as the team of NSTAR, MLMP, MEA, and HEA, working with petrochemical resources to look at the kind of the supply-demand imbalance or balance over the next few years. And that study has been updated very recently, but we're still, based on everything we've seen, even with the incentives that the state's put out, we could be in a position of shortfall as early as 2014, 2015.
Chugach Electric Association is about 90% reliant on natural gas to supply power. Utility officials agreed that oil and gas exploration in Cook Inlet has not put gas in production yet, and so it can't be expected to help to avoid a serious shortfall. They said getting the available gas into production might take 3 to 7 years, and that means importing natural gas from the lower 48. Mayor Dan Sullivan says it's clear, despite the exploration being done in Cook Inlet, the utilities will have to start moving in that direction.
There's a gap period between about 2014 and maybe about 2017 or so where there will not be enough gas under contract for either NSTAR or the electric utilities to provide the need that they need to provide to the residents. And during that period of time, I think they're making very strong plans right now today to purchase shipments of either liquefied natural gas or more likely compressed natural gas in order to fill that several-year gap.
Utility officials say they hope the state will help fund the cost of the studies and initial investments necessary to begin importation of natural gas from the lower 48, and they hope to work with the legislature during the upcoming session to solve the problem. There is about $1 million sitting in a trust account waiting for its owners to claim it. You might be one of them. The Exxon Qualified Settlement Fund is looking for about 900 people who still have money owed to them from the Exxon Valdez oil spill settlement. Dave Esting is the court-appointed lead counsel for the plaintiffs in the case. He says there is just one more push to find the claimants.
We've made quite a thorough search over the last 2 years, well, really some over 15 years, and simply have not been able to locate them. We're in the process of the last publication hopefully gets somebody's attention from one of these people to contact us in order for them to get their distribution.
Esting says the search has been going on for many years, and these last 900 people have turned out to be the hardest to find.
We've been employed someone for the last 2.5 years, engaged in intensive skip tracing activities to try to locate these people. And we have also used the very effective location process that the IRS makes available to people. And that is, it's presumed that even if you've dropped on the face of the earth, the IRS, you'll still be in touch with.
He says there will be one last publication of the names in the next few weeks in local papers before the money has to be turned over to various states. A plaintiff can still get the money owed them, even after a state claims it. But Esting says the states don't make it easy. Of the 900 names on the unpaid claimant list, many are the estates of people who have died since the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill lawsuits went to trial. In those cases, their heirs will get the money. Statistics from national organizations that gather and share information on sex trafficking show it isn't a problem in Alaska, but local experts don't believe that's accurate. The Salvation Army is hosting events in Anchorage this weekend to raise awareness of the problem. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Lauren Rice is Director of Public Affairs and Advocacy for Covenant House in Anchorage, which provides housing and other services to homeless youth aged 13 to 21. She says sex trafficking is occurring in Anchorage, although it is underreported and hard to see.
Young girls are still being put out on the streets and being forced to do things they don't want to do and being held in abusive, horrible situations. But because it's all done through the internet, they've really become silent victims in our community.
Stephanie Freeman, Social Justice Program Assistant for the Salvation Army, agrees the young are especially at risk.
Because of the domestic violence and child abuse that happens, you get a lot of runaways. The Anchorage Police Department said in 2007 that one out of three kids on the street in Anchorage will be forced into prostitution.
Freeman says Alaska Native women are another vulnerable population.
Because they're more appealing to sex traffickers because they'll sell them as being from different ethnicities, so they appeal to more people. And this is a business for them. That's why they do it, is because they're making more money. That's why they sell people.
Rice says sex traffickers isolate victims from their relatives and from their friends. And she says runaway children often don't have family to turn to. She says traffickers use abuse and fear to control their victims' behavior, including their meetings with others. She says the public can help by supporting organizations such as Abused Women's Aid in Crisis, or AWAKE, Covenant House, and the Salvation Army McKenna House, and by teaching children about sex trafficking predators.
Be aware. If you have young people in your life, then it's important to be aware that these things are happening. It's important that young people are equipped with confidence and knowledge and information, that when someone approaches them and offers elaborate gifts and wants to take care of them, most likely that is not a good situation. It is too good to be true. And just continue to educate young people and continue to empower the organizations that are working on this.
Last session, legislators unanimously adopted a bill introduced by Governor Sean Parnell making sex trafficking a felony and changing court procedures to expedite justice and make the process easier on victims. The new law also created a sex trafficking task force, which will hold its first meeting October 12th in Anchorage. This weekend, the Salvation Army is holding workshops and a walk to Town Square in Anchorage to raise awareness. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, scientists work to rid Sitka of an invasive species of sea squirt.
They just coat the surfaces of things on the bottom or net pens or anything it grows on.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
A magnitude 6.4 earthquake struck near Adak this afternoon. The quake was centered about 70 miles southwest of town, and city manager Leighton Lockett says it felt like the earth was moving in circles underneath him.
Middle of the day, everybody's working, and it just all of a sudden hit. And it was long. It wasn't a short earthquake. I want to say it was around 15, 20 seconds.
Lockett says the city is still evaluating the situation, but so far no injuries or major damage have been reported. The quake was strong enough to knock objects off walls and shelves, but it didn't generate a tsunami alert. The U.S. military is in a time of transition and future mission status is uncertain. That was the message of U.S. Army Alaska Commander Major General Michael Garrett in Fairbanks yesterday. Garrett says the end of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan means there are no combat deployments on the horizon, and the focus is on training.
We have exercises. I mean, we support exercises in Korea. We support exercises in other parts of the Pacific. We still have deployments for training down to the lower 48 in our national training and joint readiness training centers. But no deployments in support of Operation Enduring Freedom.
Garrett addressed the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce Tuesday, saying the U.S. military's focus on the Asia-Pacific region will increase Army training opportunities with countries there, but Arctic training in the state will also remain an emphasis for Alaska forces. Garrett says downsizing is not on his horizon.
The force structure that we have today is the force structure that I believe we'll have throughout my command. I mean, you know, the Army leadership can always make different decisions, but I don't really see any real impacts to the Army force structure here in Alaska.
The potential of major military budget reductions being triggered through congressionally imposed sequestration cuts is looming. But Major General Garrett says he and his staff are not doing any active planning to shrink the Army in Alaska. Scientists have been monitoring an invasive species of sea squirt growing on the bottom of Whiting Harbor in Sitka. It's called Devex. Reporter Ellen Chenoweth reports on the bizarre biology of this invasive species and how new research might help scientists get rid of it.
Sarah Cohen has built her career studying invasive marine species. But even this San Francisco State University professor admits to some unique hurdles when working with Sitka's most unwelcome visitor, Devex.
The first thing we faced after kind of brainstorming about different things to try for killing them was, gee, how do we assess if they're dead or not? And that's just, you know, if you're used to working on fish, that's not something that you get challenged by.
Still, Cohen has found some level of appreciation for the curious life form.
Some of us think it's gorgeous.
But to the untrained eye, Devex looks like something only a mother could love.
It was described as sea vomit by some people in Alaska after seeing the way that it grows is these dripping mats, kind of whitish to yellowish to tan or grayish, and it just coats the surfaces of things on the bottom or net pens or anything it grows on. And as it gets heavy, it forms these dripping, they look like stalactites coming down from the roof of a cave or something.
Devex looks like a single uniform blob, but it's actually a tightly knit group of thousands of tiny animals. Each animal is about the size of a pencil lead. They're called tunicates because they're nestled under a shared membrane, or tunic. These animals spend their entire adult lives in one place, latched onto a rock, net, or the hull of a ship. They feed by filtering microscopic food particles out of the water. This particular invader has been known to science for only about the last 10 years. In that time, Devex has astonished biologists with its ability to thrive in vastly different environments. Thought to have originated in Japan, Devex has shown up in New Zealand, both coasts of the United States, British Columbia, and Northern Europe. And like many marine invasives, it has probably been making its way from port to port by hitching a ride on shipping vessels. Once established, it has proven that it can carpet the sea floor, covering thousands and thousands of acres of underwater real estate. Marnie Chapman is an associate professor of marine biology at the University of Alaska Southeast. Chapman got to see how fast Devex colonies can grow firsthand. She had been using a mesh bag to transport samples when she noticed a few tiny fragments left behind.
And it was amazing. It, you know, it in 2 weeks it was much larger. 2 weeks after that it was much larger. in about, oh, 2.5 months, it was huge. It covered the whole laundry bag. It was dripping down from the laundry bag and dripping down to the bottom below out there at Whiting.
This dripping is the main reason why eradicating Devex is so difficult. Once a fragment breaks off and lands on a new spot, it can actually seed an entire new colony. In fact, the way Devex grows and spreads reminded Chapman of a more notorious blight in the world of biology.
I was taking a graduate course on cancer biology at the time, and it just struck me some of the similarities, the quickness with which it spreads, the way that it doesn't respect boundaries within the area that it's growing, and just sort of its ability to morph into different shapes and take over its area.
Researchers have discovered a few Devex weaknesses that may guide eradication efforts. The Smithsonian Environmental Research Center conducted some experiments in Sitka to see how well Devex could survive under different challenging conditions. A research center biologist, Linda McCann, subjected pieces of Devex to low oxygen, fresh water, extra salty water, or bleach. According to McCann, plain old sea salt, but at much higher concentrations than you typically find in the ocean, was a surprisingly effective weapon against Devex, at least on a small scale.
This last summer, we went back and tried to scale up and do this on the seafloor, and we found that even trying to do this in a very small area, that there were some issues with the salt dissipating very rapidly so that the salinity would go back down to the natural salinity very quickly. So that's something that we would have to address.
Humans have found some help getting rid of Devex. Chapman and other local Sitkins, including Carrie Hisaoka, Paul Norwood, and Jasmine Shaw, have documented a snail species that feeds on living Devex. Scientists want to know a lot more about how Devex grows, spreads, and affects local species. An important question for the Sitka area is how it will affect the survival and development of herring eggs that may settle on it during spawning. Linda Shaw works for the National Marine Fisheries Service in Juneau. She says Devex research is ongoing, but it's not her top priority.
And that's sort of a principle of invasive species management. You want to control it first and then research it.
Chapman agrees her priority is getting Devex out of Sitka.
The more esoteric aspects of its biology might be fascinating, and I'd love to study it forever, but somewhere else other than here in Sitka.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ellen Chenoweth.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. The Project Management Institute will present 3 one-day seminars at the Petroleum Club of Anchorage, October 9th, 10th, and 11th. Expert Neil Whitten will present No-Nonsense Advice for Successful Projects, Let's Talk, More No-Nonsense Advice for Project Success, and The Gift of Wisdom, Work-Life Balance for Today's Managers, Learn to Manage Projects, and more. Registration information at pmiak.org. This message sponsored by Project Management Institute, Alaska Chapter.
Alaska's healthcare leaders will exchange ideas on industry reform at a one-day conference tomorrow in Anchorage. And with full implementation of President Obama's Affordable Care Act coming in just over a year, there are no shortage of topics to discuss. The conference is called State of Reform, and it's hosted by consultant DJ Wilson. He says Alaska needs a forum to talk about the major healthcare changes that are coming with the new law.
We work in 6 or 7 different states. And the thing I see everywhere is a general anxiety about the change that's coming. What's unique in Alaska is the dearth of information about that change.
The first Anchorage State of Reform Conference was held last September. This year, Wilson is focusing the agenda on finding solutions to healthcare issues like the high cost of care. Doctors, insurance executives, state politicians, and others in the industry will all offer their ideas. Conference sessions will tackle a range of topics from innovative healthcare models to what Alaska's federally run health insurance exchange might look like. The conference starts at 8:30 tomorrow morning in downtown Anchorage. The senior citizen population in the Matanuska-Susitna borough is escalating, while affordable housing for older people is getting scarce. In the second of a series on senior issues in the Matsu, KSKA reporter Ellen Lockyer takes a look at what's being done to meet the needs of Alaska's aging baby boomers and what challenges lie ahead.
It's lunchtime at Matanuska-Susitna Senior Services in Palmer. The building serves as a gathering place for the area's older folks, many of whom live on their own but eat here communally. A salad bar bristles with fresh produce, and the hot dish line offers a choice of baked red salmon or roast chicken with a side of rice. Rachel Greenberg, Matsu Senior Services Deputy Director, sits in with the seniors at lunch. Afterwards, she takes time to give a brief tour of the center.
And in here, this is where we hold various different classes. We have the driver safety class, the AARP driver safe defensive driving class.
The center has space for card games, sewing circles, a pool table, and a library, even Taekwondo lessons. The new center opened a year ago. It took 18 years of fundraising and legislative grants to get it built. Greenberg says seniors are chronically cash-strapped and have trouble finding affordable housing.
And so really, when you're talking somebody who's very, very low income, who can't even afford a minimum rent, there really isn't a whole lot of options out there.
Many of the seniors eating lunch live in the apartment complexes Matsu Senior Services operates next door. Chugach Estates and Colony Estates, where they pay reduced rents. Those older Alaskans who reside in either of the two complexes have waited a long time to get them.
This is my end of the hall.
Edith Ekstad volunteers at the center and is on the board of directors, but she still waited 3 years to get an apartment there.
Oh, it's so big!
I know!
It's huge!
Country music blares from a radio as she shows her apartment. 89-year-old Edith raised 8 children and has lived all over Alaska. Her collection of Alaska Native baskets shows where she's been, but now she's settled comfortably in Palmer.
The more seniors are getting older and staying more active, we sure need the housing. Sometimes I feel bad because this apartment should be for a married couple, and I'm not married. I have no intention of getting married again.
Others are not so fortunate as Edith. There is a wait list of 60 people for Palmer's affordable housing units and no vacancies.
B1.
In Wasilla, seniors enjoy after-lunch bingo at the Wasilla Area Seniors Incorporated Center, or WASI. Wasilla offers 127 apartments for seniors in 5 different buildings. 167 people are on the wait list, and right now, Wasilla has only 5 vacancies, according to Karina Merrill, who is the housing manager for WASI. Merrill says the calls just keep coming in.
It could be 10 to 20 people a day. It's a lot.
WASI takes tenants at low and medium income levels for its affordable units and offers market-rate apartments for wealthier seniors. But there's a long wait either way.
The way that the list works is we start at the top. When something comes available, we start calling people for that. If they're not ready to move at that time, they have the option to stay on the list. So they may have been there for, you know, a year or two because they're not ready to move when we have an opening, but they want to stay on the list.
WASI operates its housing units for profit to cover costs, but Merrill says many who call her office are homeless or living in shelters.
I just had a call yesterday about a gentleman who's living in his truck, and he said, it's getting cold. I need a place to stay. You know, I can offer him an application to be put on the list.
Matsu's Rachel Greenberg says one factor pushing seniors on waiting lists is family stress that erupts when seniors move into the state to be near their adult children, who then get sandwiched between the generations.
They're trying to take care of mom or dad, and they're also trying to raise their children. And so since mom or dad, in many cases, can live on their own, they then encourage mom or dad to get onto the housing list. And the reality right now is we have 60 people on our housing list. The last people that we moved in have been on the waiting list for over a year.
The baby boomers who settled Alaska in the 1970s are still here, and even some of their children are edging towards senior status. That points to an even more serious housing crunch coming soon. Greenberg says more senior affordable housing has to be built to accommodate the growing senior numbers. There's no other option. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
An original piece of music has been written to celebrate the University of Alaska Fairbanks' new Arctic research vessel, the Sikuliak. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Song of the Sikuliak was composed by UAF Music Department graduate student Emerson Eads.
I actually sing in a university chorus, and one of the guys that sings in the tenor section is Rolf Greidinger, the assistant dean of fisheries. And when he heard that I was a composer, he's like, hey, what have you written? Blah, blah, blah. Kind of interviewed me for a minute. And then he's like, man, you should write something for this. This ship is happening. We need some music for this.
Eads secured a grant from the University of Alaska People's Endowment to pursue the project. He says the gravitas and angst of the piece reflect the importance of the ship to the study of human effects on the natural environment, like global warming. The Song of the Sikuliak is written for trumpet, percussion, and chamber orchestra and features vocal elements by Anchorage-based mezzo-soprano Marlene Bateman.
She represents that whole Mother Earth that you know, wanting us to be stewards of the environment and of the... And I really hope that gets across, like that, just that sense of, like this is a great ship and we should be excited about it, but... Oh man, what a responsibility UAF has. What a responsibility the National Science Foundation has, you know.
The Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra will record the 8-minute Song of the Sikuliak Saturday. The 261-foot research ship is scheduled for launch in Wisconsin October 13th. The $200 million vessel will be owned by the National Science Foundation and operated by UAF out of its Seward Marine Life Center. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ellen Chenoweth in Sitka, and Ellen Lockyer in the Mat-Su Valley. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Federal Aviation Administration setting standards for the operation of aircraft in airports. FAA.gov/go/flyAlaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Every day, over 4,000 infants and toddlers go to sleep in child care programs across Alaska in unsafe cribs. The Alaska Community Foundation is partnering with THREAD to replace unsafe cribs in licensed child care programs across Alaska with new safe cribs. To help, donate today, and the Alaska Community Foundation will provide a one-to-one match of your donation. To donate, visit alaskacf.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Community Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.